Information is free.
The law?
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
Tonight, we care,
appear to border
and it shows.
The law? Country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Peace, don't pay the bills. Terrorism is the business, and business is unfortunately good, my friends. Welcome to episode 102 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster. News, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. MediaMonarchy.com is your source this week. Police state, bioterror, Big Brother, and behavioral screening. Geopolitics and the continuing collapse in Econo Crash, TSA, KBR, lying, cheating teenagers and soldiers of misfortune, shadow government, continuity of government, domestic security, the Obamasiah, robot twins, Mumbai, marijuana, and so much more, my friends. December 5th, 2008, episode 102 of MediaMonarchy.com.
Focused brightly colored eyes, staring at the natural tan, 32 gently clenching wrinkled little hands, 17 company men, out of which only 12 will make it back again. Sergeant says a letter to find. His tears drip down from 10 little lines. Cheer them on to their rivals, 'cause America can, and America can say no. And America does if America says it's so. It's so. And the anchor person on goes la da 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 da. Fifty celebrity minds leading their 15 sordid, wretched, checkered lives. Will they find the solution in time? Using their 15 pristine, moderate, liberal minds. La-di-da-di-da-di-da-di-da-di-da-di-da. goes la da 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 la da 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 la da 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 da.
Sixteen Military Wives. That is, of course, Portland, Oregon's own The Decemberists, going back to their previous record, Picaresque, I believe from 2004. Easily the best band Portland, Oregon has ever put out there in the world. The Decemberists, 16 Military Wives. An appropriate way to begin this first episode in December 2008 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com, coming to you, as always, live every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time on the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, Sunday nights at 7 Eastern Time, revereradio.net, and, of course, KBFR in Boulder and Ground Zero Radio in Atlanta. Make some contact with me, FaceSpace, YouTube, Yahoo, IM, Skype, and the podcast anytime, iTunes, radioforall.net, and archive.org. A quick word about Skype. Still kind of struggling around with it. Still working on a way to effectively incorporate it into these shows. And I want to give a hat tip and a cheers to my man Alex in Germany for trying to make contact with me on Skype. We will make it happen, my brother. Another note, and a big thanks to Doug and Mike at blacklistednews.com, as well as numerous other sites, who reposted my story from just the other day, Project Bluebeam, TV fakery, holographic projections, and audio spotlights. 1,064 hits yesterday alone to MediaMonarchy.com, thanks in no small part to Blacklisted News. So I went over that late last night on the B-side of episode 101 of MediaMonarchy.com. Project Bluebeam, as well as a bunch of history mystery stories, Nazis, Nixon, Harvey Milk, Jim Jones, CIA, mind control, and tons more. So that is all there in the 2+ hour B-side episode of 101. One other note, and it's an important one. A reminder, we're now right smack dab in the middle of Operation Angel Thunder, a major international drill on U.S. soil that's been running since December 1st and will run for another 7 days until December 12th. So we covered this a few weeks ago on the show, Angel Thunder, major international drill on U.S. soil, of course, seeing Pakistan and the National Reconnaissance Office reunite. We originally reported from the Arizona Daily Star, to troops downed in combat, few sights are sweeter than the approach of military rescuers. In a few weeks, now, Tucson, Arizona will be at the center of efforts to speed up that life-saving process. Personnel from around the globe have converged at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base, December 1st through the 12th, for the largest rescue exercise of its kind. The effort, dubbed Angel Thunder, will involve the U.S. Army, the Air Force, troops from Germany, Chile, Colombia, and observers from Canada, Mexico, Brazil, and Pakistan. Several non-military U.S. agencies, such as the State and Justice Departments, the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, and the National Reconnaissance Office, also will take part in the drills, which aim to smooth interaction between military branches, allied nations, and civilian agencies. With about 450 personnel involved, Angel Thunder is the most complex and largest Department of Defense personnel recovery exercise to date. That from a news release from Air Combat Command in Langley, Virginia, home of the Central Intelligence Agency. Davis Monthan Air Force Base will be at the hub of the effort, but most of the mock rescue action will take place elsewhere in Arizona and New Mexico. So again, my friends, keep an eye turned to the southwest of the United States. Major international drill, Angel Thunder. And of course, that's all posted up with tons of links for you on MediaMonarchy.com. Of course, a quick look now to Google News. Quarter after 10 a.m., December 5th, 2008. Employers cut 533,000 jobs in November, the most in 34 years. And we'll get to that in just a little bit. Coming from the AP out of Las Vegas, O.J. Simpson faces 6 years to life at sentencing. And finally, Bush says any aid to automakers must be paid back. Oh, it'll be paid back by us, by you, by me. So I think that takes care of the business, my friends. And we're now going to turn to our regularly scheduled program, episode 102 of MediaMonarchy.com. Top of the page right now, Police State International, Bioterror, Big Bro, Behavioral Screening, and more. We're going to start with a report from U.S. News and World Report with numerous links within, stories within stories. We can hit up CNSNews.com, The Washington Post, PreventWMD.org, as well as the AP. A slew of warnings on nuclear, chemical, and biological terrorism prompt worries of fear-mongering, or fears of worry-mongering. After a series of dire new warnings about possible terrorist threats, capped off by a government commission's report that terrorists are likely to stage a biological or nuclear attack somewhere in the world during the next 5 years, some experts are urging officials to retire the fear card, as California Representative Jane Harman puts it. We need to educate and inform the American people, not terrify them with alarming details about possible threats to the homeland, she said, reacting to the 132-page report from the Commission for the Prevention of Weapons of Mass Destruction, Proliferation, and Terrorism released this week. Harman, who heads the House Homeland Security Subcommittee on Intelligence and Terrorism Risk Assessment, added, quote, "It's time for the rhetoric about the threat to calm instead of inflame an anxious public." Of course, the first thing to note, Jane Harman, Democrat from California, one of the main AIPAC-connected phony, fake left Democrats behind H.R. 1955, the Violent Radicalization and Homegrown Terrorism Act, basically equating dissent with terrorism. You are the target. The drumbeat started last month when Director of National Intelligence Mike McConnell said that the potential for a WMD attack in the coming decades is growing. The probability is increasing, he said, that the world will see, quote, large casualty terrorist attacks using chemical, biological, or less likely nuclear materials. And the U.S. intelligence community recently released a study warning of an increased risk of the use of mass casualty weapons by 2025. That links back around, again, to U.S. News and World Report. We can hit one of the links to the Washington Post. Bipartisan report finds U.S. vulnerable to bioterrorism attack. Of course, 7 years after the 2001 anthrax attacks, a congressionally ordered study finds a growing threat of biological terrorism and calls for aggressive defenses on par with those used to prevent a terrorist nuclear detonation. We hit the AP link. Panel warns biological attack likely by 2013. The United States can expect a terrorist attack using nukes or more likely bioweapons before 2013, reports a bipartisan commission in a study being briefed to Vice President-elect Joe Biden. It suggests the Obama administration bolster efforts to counter and prepare for germ warfare by terrorists. Our margin of safety is shrinking, not growing, states the report. And it was released publicly Wednesday. So, PreventWMD.org is the site that you can read more of the straight party line propaganda. We can hit another one to the Washington Post yet again. We could also hit CNSnews.com, Homeland Security Council planning scenario envisions anthrax attack on multiple cities. A bipartisan commission impaneled by Congress released a report saying that terrorists are likely to carry out a WMD attack somewhere in the world in the next 5 years. It's called World at Risk. The report of the Commission on the Prevention of Weapons of Mass Destruction, Proliferation, and Terrorism, chaired and vice-chaired by Bob Graham and Jim Talent. A slew of warnings and fear-mongering and worry-mongering about nuke, Kim, and bioterror. Returning to the Washington Post, Stratcom urges quick nuclear weapons modernization. The leader of the U.S. Strategic Command said that time is not on our side to modernize the nation's nuclear weapons stockpile, particularly as China and Russia upgrade their warheads and delivery systems. The path of inaction is a path leading toward nuclear disarmament. The time to act is now, Air Force General Kevin P. Chilton told an audience of government, military, and civilian arms experts attending the Nuclear Deterrence Summit in Washington. But Representative Ellen O. Tauscher, T-A-U-S-C-H-E-R, Democrat of California again, chairman of the House Armed Services Subcommittee on Strategic Weapons, told the same audience that the nation's nuclear modernization program was in a holding pattern until the Obama-siah could review studies that are to be completed next year. Chilton said he was concerned that Congress had effectively killed the Bush administration's Reliable Replacement Warhead Program, designed to provide a modern, safer warhead with no new capabilities before the end of the decade. Expressing concern that the nation's Cold War stockpile is aging, Chilton said that, quote, a reliable nuclear inventory supports non-proliferation goals. We can hit the link to Reliable Replacement Warhead, and wouldn't you know it, it has a Wikipedia entry. Reliable Replacement Warhead, RRW, is a controversial new American nuclear warhead design and bomb family, the bomb family. That's intended to be simple, reliable, and to provide long-lasting, low-maintenance future nuclear force in the United States. It's also the project name for the ongoing U.S. Department of Energy National Nuclear Security Administration, NNSA, design project, started in 2004. So, on March 2, 2007, a design from Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory was selected as the first RRW program warhead design, which will now enter Phase 2A. There are other links in there. You can, of course, go to Representative Tauscher's website and hit the LA Times blog, exchangemonitor.com, and read about the threataganda from Air Force General Kevin P. Chilton. The first site I saw that mentioned the threataganda from Chilton was from a week or so ago from a man, Greg Nixon, at Daily Dose of Terror. So one of the first links to him, he goes over Iran War Games, Northrop, ABM, nuclear terror, and more. However, let's jump across the pond. Again, couldn't call it Police State USA anymore because it's not just here. It's everywhere. From the Daily Mail, UK's Big Brother police to get wartime powers. State officials are to be given powers previously reserved for times of war to demand a person's proof of identity at any time. Anybody who refuses the Big Brother demand could face arrest and a possible prison sentence. The new rules come in legislation unveiled on December 3rd, Queen's speech. They're presented as a crackdown on illegal immigration. We always use the crackdown on illegal immigration to do other things we'd like to do, like biometric passports or the prohibition of marijuana. They are presented as a crackdown on illegal immigration, but lawyers say they could be applied to anybody who has ever been outside the UK, even on holiday. The civil rights group Liberty, which analyzed clauses from the new Immigration and Citizenship Bill, called them an attempt to introduce compulsory ID cards by the back door. Same idea, different country. Germany. This from the Telegraph. German police get powers to hack into home computers. Under a compromise between the hardline Interior Minister Wolfgang Schäuble and dissenting MPs, Germany's parliament is put unprecedented powers in the hands of the Federal Criminal Police, BKA. they are criminal. New laws, some of the toughest in Europe, will also allow police to bug and photograph suspects' homes, tap their phones, and track the location of their mobile calls. Under the compromise, the police will need a judge's approval before using the Trojans, even in an emergency. Trojans will carry remote forensic software that can search hard drives and send evidence back to investigators without their having to enter the suspect's home. TheRegister.co.uk covers Italy's fascist media mogul Silvio Berlusconi. He plans to use his time as the G8 president to, quote, regulate the internet. Italian president and media baron Silvio Berlusconi said that he would use his country's imminent presidency of the G8 group to push for an international agreement to regulate the internet. Speaking to Italian postal workers, Reuters reports Berlusconi said, quote, the G8 has as its task the regulation of financial markets. I think the next G8 can bring to the table a proposal for a regulation of the internet. Italy's G8 presidency begins on January 1st. The role is taken by each of the group's members in rotation. The holder country is responsible for organizing and hosting the G8's meetings and setting the agenda. Italy's last G8 presidency in 2001, also under Berlusconi, was marred by riots at the annual meeting in Genoa. And all the agent provocateur false flag violence that happened there. And of course, on a related 9/11 note, that they had anti-aircraft missile batteries set up around the facilities at the Genoa summit because they were worried about people using airplanes as weapons. Again and again and again, putting the lie to Condi and Bush's, and no one ever thought they could use airplanes, blah, blah, blah. So speaking of Shrub and his little FCC bitch, Kevin Martin, of course, now that Michael Powell, you know, Colin Powell's son, has done his great work at the FCC. Bush's FCC chairman considering porn-free internet. Not a free porn internet. This from Raw Story. Bush's FCC chairman, Kevin Martin, is still considering a proposal to create a free, porn-free internet, according to the Wall Street Journal, with a link for you. Quote, the free internet plan is the most controversial issue the agency will tackle in December. Mr. Martin shelved plans to consider a wider variety of sticky issues pending at the agency, including a request by the Hollywood studios to hobble TVs and set-top boxes so studios can offer copy-protected theatrical releases sooner. The proposal to allow a no-smut, free wireless internet service is part of a proposal to auction off a chunk of airwaves. The winning bidder would be required to set aside a quarter of the airwaves for a free internet service. So, again, call it Internet 2. Call it what you want. The crackdown is coming. The regulation of the internet is coming. As I mentioned in last night's B-side of 101, I, to this day, try and treat the internet as I did when my man Ian in 1999 told me about, man, you gotta look at this thing called Napster. Treat the internet like it could disappear tomorrow. Save everything. Burn it off. Keep it. Archive it. Because you never know. And of course, the footnote, Kevin Martin was deputy general counsel for the Bush-Cheney 2000 recount. Another Bush note from Threat Level, courtroom showdown, Bush demands spying telecom amnesty. The Bush administration Tuesday tried to convince a federal judge to let stand a law granting retroactive legal immunity to the nation's telecoms, which are accused of transmitting Americans' private communications to the NSA without warrants. At issue in the high-stakes showdown are the nearly four dozen lawsuits filed by civil liberties groups and class-action attorneys against AT&T, Verizon, MCI, Sprint, and other carriers who allegedly cooperated with the Bush administration's domestic surveillance program in the years following 9/11. It's not to mention all the things before 9/11. But continuing, The lawsuits claim the cooperation violated federal wiretapping laws and the Constitution. And there's a PDF, a little tiny PDF for you from some of the pertinent questions that's in this story from Threat Level. In July, as part of a wider domestic spying bill, Congress voted to kill the lawsuits and grant retroactive amnesty to any phone companies that helped with the surveillance. President-elect Barack Obama was among those who voted for the law in Senate. President-elect Barack Obama was among those who voted for the law in the Senate. On Tuesday, lawyers with the Electronic Frontier Foundation, EFF.org, are set to urge the federal judge overseeing those lawsuits to reject immunity as unconstitutional. At stake, they say, is the very principle of the rule of law in America. There are links to other Threat Level stories in there. And again, Obama voted for telecom spying amnesty. You can feel the change. Oh, I can feel it. I can feel the change, and it gives me the fucking shivers. Last story on this Police State International posting, bioterror, big bro, behavioral screening, and more. Here's the behavioral screening, the future of airport security. This from CNN. Keep your shoes and belt on. Waiting in long airport security lines to pass through metal detectors may soon be a thing of the past. Security experts say focus is shifting from analyzing the content of carry-ons to analyzing the content of passengers' intentions and emotions. We're seeing a needed paradigm shift when it comes to security, says Omer Laviv, CEO of Athena GS3, an Israeli-based security company. This brain fingerprinting, or technology which checks for behavioral intent, is much more developed than we think. Again, that's Omer Laviv, CEO of Athena GS3, an Israeli-based security company, talking. This brain fingerprinting or technology which checks for behavioral intent is much more developed than we think. Nowhere is the need for cutting-edge security more acute than Israel, which faces constant security threats. For this reason, Israel has become a leader in developing security technology. And I shouldn't have to mention, of course, all the times that Israel is involved in false flag attacks, thereby perpetuating the myth of Israel as the victim. So we need to create all these new police state measures. Problem, reaction, solution. They cause the problem. You react. They offer the solution they wanted in the first place, but didn't have the fear, money, mandate, or political capital to do it. The next post, geopolitics, my friend. Georgia, Russia, Mossad, Turkey, Iceland melts, and crisis Canada. First, again, newsflash. We've had lots of amazing duh news flashes lately. And again, they're now coming from mainstream sources. That's been the fascinating thing, at least just over the 2 years of doing the radio show of MediaMonarchy.com. More and more, you see things that originally would have come from those crazy conspiracy sites, but no longer. Mikhail Saakashvili confesses, we started the war. More excellent good work from RussiaToday.com. For the first time ever, Georgian President Mikhail Saakashvili has admitted that his country started the military conflict in South Ossetia in August, 888. But the Georgian leader is adamant the action was justified. He was testifying before a parliamentary commission investigating the five-day war.
Now, Georgian President Mikhail Saakashvili has for the first time acknowledged that it was Tbilisi who started a military operation in South Ossetia, but called it a justified and adequate measure. And he made this statement during questioning by a Georgian government commission investigating the recent war. He said the operation was Tbilisi's response to Russia's intervention and was aimed at protecting Georgian citizens in South Ossetia. Saakashvili emphasized that any democratic state would have done the same. Russian officials say that around 1,000 and a half civilians were killed in the operation, and thousands were injured. Now, the commission has already questioned a number of state officials, including Georgia's former ambassador to Russia, who's been a vocal critic of Saakashvili. In an interview with RT, Yerossi Krismashvili said that those responsible for starting the Georgian self-asserting conflict should be brought to trial.
I'm interested to see what Georgian society will demand. I think, first of all, we need to discover the causes of this conflict, and I think that Georgia should condemn the actions of those responsible inside the country. If this is Saakashvili and his decision, he should be tried in court. And again, it should be for the Georgian people to decide what kind of court. If we fail to do so, we will never be able to face the Abkhazians and the Ossetians and tell them we want to live in the same house with them and offer them one state.
So, what's in store for the political future of Georgia, and how will it shape relations with its neighbors? RT will bring you the full interview with Georgia's former ambassador to Russia this Sunday.
Again, more fine work from Russia today. Saakashvili admits, we started the war. Jumping now to Iranian news from PressTV.ir, Mossad role in Turkey coup plot revealed. Israel's national intelligence agency, Mossad, has been behind a failed coup in Turkey, the Turkish daily paper Milliyet reports. Now, as a sidebar note, when you hear Israel's Mossad, you should know that it's synonymous with the U.S.'s CIA or Pakistan's ISI or the U.K.'s MI6 or MI5. It's the black op groups. A secret investigation into detained Ergenekon, and that is E-R-G-E-N-E-K-O-N, Ergenekon, and I may not be pronouncing that correctly, a secret investigation into detained Ergenekon group members and other studies outside Turkey indicate the Mossad orchestrated the coup plot against the Turkish government. The Ergenekon group is a Turkish neo-nationalist organization with alleged links to the military, members of which have been arrested on charges of plotting to foment unrest in the country. Investigators uncovered evidence that show a Jewish rabbi named Tunke Guney, G-U-N-E-Y, who worked for Mossad and fled to Canada in 2004, was a key figure behind attempts to overthrow the Turkish government. Black Ops. Returning to Iceland for more news and their economic crash, although we have our Econo crash stories coming up in just a moment. However, Icelanders protest economic meltdown. This from the Associated Press, the International Herald Tribune, Philly.com, IcelandReview.com, and even a flashback to MediaMonarchy.com. Icelanders protest economic meltdown. From IHT, thousands of Icelanders marked the 90th anniversary of their nation's sovereignty with angry protests Monday, December 1st, and several hundred stormed the central bank to demand the ouster of the banksters they blame for the country's spectacular economic meltdown. Tiny Iceland has seen its banks and currency collapse in just a few weeks while prices and unemployment soar, leaving a country regarded as a model of Scandinavian prosperity in a state of shock. The government played roulette and the whole nation has lost, writer Einar Már Guðmundsson told a noisy but peaceful anti-government rally of several thousand people in downtown Reykjavik. The final story here on the geopolitics heading of Georgia, Russia, Mossad, Turkey, Iceland melts, its crisis-torn Canada suspends their parliament. This from the AFP. Canada's crisis-torn parliament was suspended Thursday in a move which helped Prime Minister Stephen Harper block an opposition bid to topple his government and take over without fresh elections. Acting head of state, Governor General Michel Jean agreed to Harper's demand to suspend the two-week-old assembly during 2 hours of crisis talks. On my advice, the Governor General has agreed to prorogue Parliament. Links for you. Definitions. On my advice, the Governor General has agreed to suspend Parliament. After a week of turmoil when three opposition parties banded together to oust his new government, the Liberal opposition, led by Stéphane Dion, has spearheaded the moves to topple the Conservative government, accusing Harper of failing to shore up the plunging economy in the Group of Eight nation, G8. Berlusconi. Regulate. The opposition had scheduled a parliamentary vote of no confidence on Monday, leaving Harper fighting for his survival just 7 weeks after being reelected at the head of a minority government in snap elections. But Harper vowed yesterday, December 4th, quote, "When Parliament resumes on January 26th, the first order of business will be the presentation of a federal budget." And we can link to Canada.com. British magazine paints political crisis as un-Canadian. That's from Peter O'Neill, European correspondent for the Canada.com website. So now, as I mentioned, we're there. Econo crash. Bailouts, sellouts, job cuts, and war. First, from Bloomberg. U.S. jobless rolls climb to a 26-year high. More Americans are collecting jobless benefits than at any time in the last 26 years as companies rush to cut costs in a sinking economy. The number of people on unemployment benefit rolls rose to 4.09 mil in the week ending November 22nd, the most since December 1982, the Labor Department said in Washington, with a link for you to DOL.gov in their annual 2008 report. A separate report showed orders at U.S. factories tumbled in October by the most in 8 years as demand collapsed at home and abroad. AT&T, DuPont, and Viacom today announced plans to eliminate more than 15,000 jobs as consumer spending falters and the recession deepens. The Labor Department today is reporting that the U.S. unemployment rate jumped to a 15-year high of 6.8% in November, according to the median forecast in a Bloomberg survey of economists. Businesses are battening down the hatches. Stuart Hoffman, chief economist at PNC Financial Services Group Incorporated in Pittsburgh, said in a Bloomberg television interview, "Job losses are going to continue to accelerate." There's links in there to 680news.com. The number of Americans getting government aid hits 26-year high. And again, we can just glance at Google News right now. Employers cut 533,000 jobs in November, the most in 34 years. And another one from Reuters, U.S. late mortgage payments and foreclosures hit a record. The aforementioned American Telegraph and Telephone, AT&T, they're cutting 12,000 jobs. This, again, from the AFP. U.S. telecommunications giant AT&T announced Thursday it was cutting 12,000 jobs and slashing capital spending due to an economic downturn. The Dallas, Texas-based company said the, quote, "planned reduction of approximately 12,000 jobs, or about 4% of the company's total workforce, would occur in December and throughout the next year." The job cuts stemmed from, quote, "economic pressures, a changing business mix, and a more streamlined organizational structure," it said in a statement, with a link for you to ATT.com and their press release. AT&T also wants to cut its 2009 capital expenditures, with details to be provided in late January when the company releases its fourth quarter results. The company said $600 million in severance pay would be given to affected employees. Coming home to the Pacific Northwest, it's going to hurt a lot here. CNN Money is reporting that JPMO is going to cut 9,200 jobs at WaMu. So JPMO cuts WaMu. JPMorgan Chase said Monday, December 1st, it plans to lay off 9,200 employees at Washington Mutual, the failed savings and loan that the New York City-based banking giant bought in September. Once the largest savings and loan in the country, Seattle-based WaMu collapsed because of bad bets on mortgages, resulting in the largest bank failure in U.S. history. At the end of the third quarter, JPMorgan Chase reported that Washington Mutual had nearly 42,000 employees, so the 9,200 job cuts will represent more than 20% of WaMu's headcount at the time that it failed. JPMorgan will slash 3,400 WaMu employees in Seattle, Washington, according to JPMorgan Chase spokeswoman Christine Holevas. That comes on top of the 1,600 job cuts in Pleasanton and San Francisco, California, which the company announced last week. The remaining 4,200 cuts will come from Washington Mutual offices nationwide. But, of course, they added that most branch workers will keep their jobs. Most of the layoffs will be at the corporate level. So, don't worry, your shitty service job will be the only thing that's left. There's an article from Cryptagon on the coming famine of 2009, but if we jump to our own Oregonian, Portland area temp workers losing jobs. Temp workers are losing jobs in droves, according to state figures released Monday, November 24th, that pegged the greater Portland area's unemployment rate at 6.9% in October. The seasonally adjusted jobless rate, up from September's 5.8%, is the highest since mid-04, when the region was emerging from the 2001-03 recession. But it's lower than the state's rate of 7.3% in October. Cutting to the chase. About 75,800 Portland-area residents were unemployed and looking for work in October, up 23,200 from a year ago. The relatively diverse Portland economy tends to have a lower unemployment rate than the state as a whole because it has less agriculture and fewer seasonal workers. And people keep moving into the area despite the lack of job growth. And Oregonians who lose jobs tend not to leave the state. And I have to say, on a personal note, that was kind of my situation when I moved here just over 3 years ago, November 2005. It took me months to find steady work. A sad story to me. This comes from the Associated Press, and I wonder how many people are in this spot. Soldiers choose war over bleak economy. Sergeant Ryan Nyhus, NYHUS, spent 14 months patrolling the deadly streets of Baghdad, where five members of his platoon were shot and one died. As bad as that was, he'd rather go back there than take his chances in this brutal job market. Nyhus re-enlisted last Wednesday, and in doing so, joined the growing ranks of those choosing to stay in the U.S. military because of the bleak economy. "In the Army, you're always guaranteed a steady paycheck and a job," said the 21-year-old Nyhus. "Deploying's something that's going to happen. That's a fact of life in the Army, a fact of life in the infantry." In 2008, as the stock market cratered and the housing market collapsed, more young members of the Army, Air Force, and Navy decided to re-up. While several factors might explain the rise in re-enlistments, including a decline in violence in Iraq, Pentagon officials acknowledge that bad news for the economy is usually good news for the military. In fact, the Pentagon just completed its strongest recruiting year in 4 years. When the fake economy collapses, the only jobs left will be with the military, or hey, maybe we'll get to join Obama's civilian national security force. Does this all sound a little familiar? Unless you slept through history class, we're repeating history. And even if you know your history, we still might be condemned to repeat it. Broken down economies due to phony, protracted, financially backbreaking countries and war lead to widespread unemployment and disaffected military folks, and the only jobs left are in the Stasi. Protesters chant bailout is a sellout as Big Three execs testify. This from Raw Story. Protesters were escorted from a Senate hearing room Thursday chanting the bailout is a sellout as executives from the Big Three automakers requested $34 billion in taxpayer funds they said was necessary to prevent collapse. About 18 people were escorted from the Senate Banking Committee hearing. The bailout is a sellout. The poor are suffering. The homeless, the hungry, they're suffering. The protesters chanted as Capitol Police escorted them from the room. Before the outburst, Senator John Tester, Democrat of Montana, was questioning the auto executives and criticizing President Bush's policies. "I hope this doesn't count against my time," he quipped, reminding me, of course, of the snottiness of George Poppy Bush in one of the debates back in the 80s where he wanted his time reset because of all the applause he got took away from his time. You should look for that clip. It's unclear who organized the protesters, but none appeared to be dressed in the rosy garb that has been a trademark of Code Pink, the anti-war group that regularly interrupts House and Senate hearings with protests. There is a video for you, my friends. I'm not going to play that clip. However, I'm going to play this clip. CNN censors Federal Reserve rant. This from Paul Joseph Watson. Technical difficulties or deliberate censorship? CNN does not usually afford a soapbox to Peter Schiff, who we've featured on Media Monarchy before. Because he's one of a rare breed of financial analysts, he can actually identify the root of the problem, the Federal Reserve. So when Schiff was cut off during the height of his rant against the Fed, many of our readers questioned whether it was a deliberate act of sabotage.
All right, well, one man who's been keeping a close eye on the government's bailout plans, all of them, is Peter Schiff. He's the president of Euro-Pacific Capital. It's a global investment strategy company and the author of the Little Book of Bull Moves in Bear Markets. Would be a good read these days. He joins me now live. Let's talk about Citigroup, given that we've just been hearing from Alan on that. You know, they make the decision about bailing Citigroup out. They say it's too important to fail. They don't say that about Lehman. They're considering what they're doing with the auto companies at the moment. They haven't made a decision about that. What do you think of these decisions at this point?
Well, the only good decision they made was letting Lehman Brothers fail. And somehow they think that's the source of our problems. What about all the companies that they did bail out? You know, we're in this mess for a reason. It's because of government spending, because of too much debt. And these bailouts simply, you know, we're accumulating more debt. And the government is broke. You got Barack now talking about the $700 billion a stimulus plan, maybe $1 trillion. We don't have any money. You know, we need the world to lend us this money. We need the Chinese, we need the Japanese to lend us money that we can't pay back. Because you know what we're going to do with the money? We're going to spend it. And then when it's gone, we're going to be begging for more.
Yeah, let's talk about this stimulus package because it's big and it's getting bigger by the day. Barack Obama's put this group of economy group together, as it were. We're beginning to learn the names of those. Are they the right men and women for the job at this point?
Now, look, if they think the economy needs more stimulus, they shouldn't be in these jobs. You know, we don't even need any economic advisors. We should abolish them all. I mean, look at this mess we're in. They're giving bad advice. We don't need stimulus. We don't need Americans spending more money. That's how we got into this mess. We borrowed money and we spent it. Now we can't pay it back. Americans need to make things. They need to go to work and they need to save their money. We can't try to stimulate the economy through more spending. And we can't just
keep bailing.
But you
stimulate the economy by more spending overnight, effectively, because you don't make anything anymore. That's the problem. That can't change, can it?
Well, it can change.
That's a long-term plan.
Yes, but it has to change, and the government has to let it change. The government has to get out of the way and let our phony economy collapse. I know it's going to be painful, but it's necessary. We can't keep pretending we have a viable economy and expecting the rest of the world to finance it. You know, we have to actually make things. We need a real industrial revolution in this country. We don't need more economic stimulus. That's more of the problem. And we can't keep rewarding people. Look at this Citicorp bailout. I mean, look how much money these executives at these companies make. How can we let these guys pay themselves millions of dollars when the companies are broke? They're not going to make any money over there for years. So the government's going to keep giving them more and more money so they can lavish it out on the executives. And, you know, now we're probably going to have to bail out General Motors because we bailed out Citi. You know, General Motors needs to fail. But, you know, now we've got to support the overpaid union workers in Detroit because we're supporting the overpaid bankers in New York.
You let Citibank fail, would you, today?
Of course. I'd have let AIG fail. I'd have let Bear fail. There'd be a lot of firms that would be failing if the government had stepped out of the way. But capitalism isn't about propping up failed companies. We need to let them fail. There's reason that these companies are going broke. We don't want to prop them up. Now, of course, behind it all is the Federal Reserve. If the Federal Reserve had never intervened in the market back in 2001 and 2002, had they not poured all this alcohol, then Wall Street wouldn't have got drunk. But they did. They made a lot of bad decisions, and now we've got to suffer the consequences. But it's not fair to try to say that the whole country, that everybody around the world who's holding U.S. dollars has to pay because of the bad bets made on Wall Street.
All right. So given what you're saying, you say government get out of the way, let the invisible hand of the free markets work this out. You'd be staring down the barrel of awfully difficult time for a very long time for many, many Americans at this point.
No question about that. But it's false to assume that the government can do anything about that. I am convinced that everything the government is doing to fight this off is going to make
And I'm afraid we've lost our guest there. I'm sorry about that, technical problems, but we heard his thoughts. Interesting one, Peter Schiff there, the president of Euro-Pacific. Cattle, these things happen, right? Well, news of Citigroup...
Oh, well, whoops. When you're about to say that the things we're about to do are going to make things absolutely worse, sometimes your feed gets cut from CNN International. So that was Peter Schiff. Jumping now to last Saturday's posting, but staying on the Econo crash tip, civil war, unrest, collapse, and bankruptcies. Again, good work from RussiaToday.com, Civil War USA 2009. Russia Today interviews Igor Panarin, P-A-N-A-R-I-N, a professor at the Diplomatic Academy of the Russian Foreign Affairs Ministry, who believes the economic crisis in the U.S. has confirmed his long-held belief that the country is heading for extinction in its present form.
The financial crisis and its potential consequences have been occupying the minds of many experts across the globe recently. Indeed, turmoil originated in the US. And a Russian professor of economics has put forward his own theory about the impact the credit crunch will have on America. Joined in the studio now by Igor Panarin, who says the US will split into six pieces because of the crisis. Let's talk more about this. Good evening to you. Thanks for joining us in the studio. Quite controversial thoughts, these. Explain your thought process.
I believe that in
1998 I was right in my theory. It has to do with the fact that, first of all, different states of the United States have different history, different culture, and different level of financial and economical significance in the life and activities of the United States. Today I believe that the world is at the point of United States development when, in fall of 2009, there may a huge crisis may develop, and eventually it will lead in summer of 2010 that the territory of the United States will be divided into six different states.
My immediate thought is, do you think this would have happened, may happen, according to your theory, if it weren't for the financial crisis? And if this scenario did happen, where would the power base be?
Well, the main power base, there will be actually three power bases on the territory of the United States: New York and Washington, which will be under the influence of London, first of all. It's California, Texas, which will be under the influence of three countries: Russia, China, and Mexico, from my point of view.
Now, German Chancellor Angela Merkel says the U.S. got into this trouble in the first place by borrowing cheap money and using cheap money. Do you agree with her?
I believe that she's right. First of all, I can emphasize that Russia and Germany often have the same points of view as far as the financial crisis is concerned in particular. But I also want to emphasize that the problem is that the dollar is not backed by gold, and there are too many dollars in this world.
Well, Mr. Panarin, what are your forecasts for the outcome here in Russia regarding the financial crisis?
I believe that the crisis in Russia can be finally prevented only with making the ruble the main reserve currency of Eurasia and turning Moscow into the main financial center of the Eurasian continent.
Just very briefly, I just want to also pick up on something you said in your report that you even speculated this scenario that Alaska might want to renew its ties with Russia. Why is that then?
I believe that Alaska should return to Russia, and there is a very good manager, Roman Abramovich, who's been really successful in managing to quote, because I believe that he will manage with ruling Alaska as well.
Okay, well, Mr. Panarin, it's very good to hear your, let's say, rather different views tonight on the program, but good to see you in the program nevertheless.
Igor Panarin, Diplomatic Academy of Foreign Affairs Ministry, Civil War USA 2009. Jumping now to more excellent good work from naturalnews.com. Financial disaster will lead to civil disorder in 2009 or 10, says secret Citibank memo. An internal memo from a top Citibank analyst reveals what the banks really think about the global financial situation, and the outlook is grim. The world is not going back to normal after the magnitude of what they have done. When the dust settles, this will either work, and the money they have pushed into the system will feed through into an inflation shock, wrote Tom Fitzpatrick, Citibank's chief technical strategist. He goes on to explain that the massive money creation efforts by the Federal Reserve and other central banks will end with one of two things: a resurgence of inflation, or a fall into, quote, depression, civil disorder, and possibly wars. Either outcome, he says, will cause the price of gold to skyrocket. Gold will push to well over $2,000 per ounce. The timing on all this? Sometime in either 2009 or 10, said not only the Russian professor, but also the Citibank analyst. A couple U.S. collapse updates from DailyDoseOfTerror.blogspot.com. Russian analyst predicts decline and breakup of U.S. Citigroup collapses, banking shutdown possible, and financial meltdown. You ain't seen nothing yet. Jumping to the south of the United States of North American Union, Georgia's I-85 carpool lanes converted to toll roads. This from the Gwinnett Daily Post out of Georgia. Interstate 85's carpool lanes will be converted to toll lanes, as U.S. Transportation Secretary Mary Peters announced last Tuesday. And she announced a $110 million grant to get Gwinnett's traffic moving. While the toll pricing has not been determined, rates would change based on congestion on the interstate, and cars with three or more people in them would still be free. America's cities are struggling under the weight of higher population and greater demands on their roads and transit systems. Only by taking aggressive, forward-thinking approaches like Atlanta has done can urban areas hope to remain competitive in the century ahead. What they fail to mention, of course, is that generally this money goes to international corporations. So whether it's Spain's Cintra or Australia's, I can't remember the name, the toll roads, the roads, they're buying up the infrastructure. America is for sale. Next from The Guardian, of course, Citigroup. U.S. rescues Citi with $20 billion in capital and guarantees. The U.S. government has bailed out Citigroup Incorporated, agreeing to shoulder most of the potential losses on a $306 billion of high-risk assets and inject $20 billion of new capital in its biggest rescue of a bank yet. We're saying this every week now. Oh, it's the biggest yet. Oh, it's the biggest yet. Dwarfing it again and again and again. Citigroup's rescue marks the latest government effort to contain a widening financial meltdown that has caused the disappearance or bankruptcies of companies including Bear Stearns, Lehman Brothers, and Washington Mutual. A couple more U.S. bankruptcy updates from Daily Dose of Terror. Fed pledges to top $7.4 trillion to ease frozen credit. The Federal Reserve and the Treasury offer half our GDP to Wall Street. And Financial Newsletter predicts U.S. to default on national debt. And we've covered, I believe, all those things either in part or in whole on MediaMonarchy.com. And we're now just about into our number two on this episode 102 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's December 5th, 2008. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster. Coming to you live every Friday morning, as always, from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and Sunday nights at 7 Eastern Time on revereradio.net. Now's the time to feel the change. Can you feel that change? Or as I've said repeatedly in the last few weeks, Obamazoid, have you had your oh shit moment yet? I bet you have. You might not want to admit it yet. Massive posting on the coming criminal cabinet and the Obamasiah. Feel the change. More neocons and hawks in Obama cabinet. First from the Associated Press, Obama announces Clinton and Gates for his cabinet. President-elect Obama on Monday, December 1st, announced a foreign policy team led by former campaign rival Hillary and Bush's defense secretary Gates, both early supporters of a war in Iraq that he opposed and will be seeking to wind down. At a news conference, Obama also introduced retired Marine General James Jones as White House National Security Advisor, former Justice Department official Eric Holder as Attorney General, and Arizona Governor Janet Napolitano as Secretary of Homeland Stupidity. The announcements rounded out the top tier of the team that will advise the incoming chief executive on foreign and national security issues in an era marked by wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and terrorism around the globe. There is, of course, the video from Raw Story and NBC of the news conference presenting his criminal cabinet. But let's jump to Reuters. Obama vows to continue to invest in military. President-elect Obama vowed on Monday to continue to invest to strengthen the U.S. military, increase ground forces, and ensure success against Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. Announcing his national security team, Obama and Gates, together at last, they reiterated the intention to announce a new mission as soon as he took office to end the war in Iraq. Quote, "We will also ensure that we have the strategy and resources to succeed against Al-Qaeda and the Taliban," Obama told a news conference. "And going forward, we will continue to make the investments necessary to strengthen our military and increase our ground forces to defeat the threats of the 21st century." So, a few links, of course, predicting, none surprisingly, meet the new boss, same as the old boss, on many fronts. However, this front, as predicted, Robert Gates will be staying on as defense secretary in the new Obama-Saya criminal cabinet. So we've got links to Danger Room. We've also got links to thinkprogress.org. Gates will stay on as secretary of defense. Also military.com. And we also have mydd.com, the pros and cons of keeping Gates on at defense. But we also have an article from the one and only Paul Joseph Watson and Kurt Nemo. Gates announces plan to make National Guard a homeland operational force. Going back to November 25th, Defense Secretary Gates has ordered the Pentagon to conduct a broad review to determine if the military and the National Guard and Reserve can adequately deal with domestic disasters, including a catastrophic attack on the country, this according to the AP. Gates' order falls on the heels of an earlier report released by the Commission on the National Guard and Reserves, urging the Pentagon to, quote, use the nation's citizen soldiers to create an operational force that would be fully trained, equipped, and ready to defend the nation. The new Obama administration, a lot more of the same, is an article in globalresearch.ca. However, another one from Press TV, reposted again by Global Research, Obama to be next neocon U.S. president. The next U.S. government might not be able to keep its promise on change and might turn into a war-oriented administration, a prominent historian says. President-elect Obama, who inspired Americans during his presidential campaign, defeated his rival McCain thanks to the new slogans in an historic election last month. During his transition time, Obama's been trying to name his administration among AIPAC lobbyists, foreign relation advisors, and congressmen. Selecting Biden as vice president, who supported the war in Iraq before it became unpopular, was a surprising decision when Obama himself opposed the war. Biden's a strong supporter of Israel. He even made the statement, "I am a Zionist," said Stephen Snigowski, U.S. historian and author, telling Press TV correspondents in Washington. Stephen Snigowski, S-N-I-E-G-O-S-K-I, Obama to be the next neocon U.S. president. Obama Dream Team, Rubin Clones, and Political Fakery. This from BlacklistedNews.com and an exclusive article from Mike Whitney. Again, BlacklistedNews.com growing by leaps and bounds. Much congrats and thanks to Doug and Mike at BlacklistedNews.com for all their hard work. So, Mike Whitney has an exclusive article, Obama Dream Team, Rubin Clones, and Political Fakery. However, another from Kurt Nemo, Neocons Heart Obama. Max Boot just adores Obama's proposed national security team, especially the retention of Gates as SecDef. And, of course, Jim Jones, General Jim Jones at the NSC. I have to admit that I'm gobsmacked by these appointments, most of which could just have easily come from a President McCain. And you can link to CommentaryMagazine.com and read more from Max Boot about he's just so happy with the new criminal cabinet. Another one from Global Research, Obama's odious entourage. However, returning to the Washington Post, Obama picks former Federal Reserve Chair to head his new economic advisory panel. Obama's appointment of former Federal Reserve Chairman Paul Volcker. V-O-L-C-K-E-R. Trilateralist. Head of the Federal Reserve during Carter's administration, when Brzezinski was pulling the strings. Again, history repeating itself. Obama's appointment of Volcker to the growing team advising him on the nation's deepening financial crisis only heightens a central leadership challenge the president-elect will face: how to manage a stable packed and stacked with big brains and even bigger personalities, and how to make decisions when those high-powered experts disagree. Volcker, as chairman of Obama's new Economic Recovery Advisory Board, will join New York Federal Reserve Bank President Timothy Geithner, who will lead the Treasury Department, and former Treasury Secretary Larry Summers, who will run the White House's National Economic Council. The appointment of Volcker, who led the fight to rejuvenate the U.S. economy after the stagflation of the 70s, is part of Obama's effort to seek the best minds in America to deal with the current crisis, as the president-elect himself put it this week. The best minds in America. Huh, why is it the best minds in America all seem to come from the same couple of think tanks and secret societies and Wall Street bankster fronts? They're all still Skull and Bones, Trilateral Commission, Project for a New American Century, Council on Foreign Relations, Brookings Institute, Neocon Hawks. There is a bit of audio, and we'll hit a couple more headlines about the growing chorus of questions about Obama's citizenship. From my.wrif.com, there's audio from the Kenyan ambassador, again confirming that Obama was born in Kenya. And we'll hit some of those other questions in just a moment. However, one from McClatchy: Obama's unusual transition, already a co-president. America's never seen anything quite like this. The president and president-elect acting like co-presidents. It's pretty unusual. That was said by George Edwards, a presidential expert at Texas A&M University. And there's a video to go along with this, and I believe I mentioned this a week or so ago, Bush and Obama acting as co-presidents, the mask more or less completely slipping from the face of the controlled left and the controlled right. It's not red state versus blue state, it's the state versus you. Another note that just reinforces what I just said. This from thewashingtonnote.com. Obama-Cain camps coordinated on staff rosters for the next government. A senior Obama campaign official shared with The Washington Note that in July 2008, McCain and Obama began to work secretly behind the scenes to assemble large rosters of potential personnel for the administration that only one of the candidates would lead. Lists comprised of Dems and Repugs were assembled, sorted into areas of policy expertise so that the roster could be called on after the election by either Obama or McCain. This kind of out-of-sight coordination is rare between battling presidential camps and provides some indication that both Obama and McCain intended to draw expertise into their governments from both sides of the aisle. Or at least they wanted to appear interested in doing so if the information leaked out about the list development process. Fascinating tidbit on cooperation behind battle lines. That's the status quo party line way to put it. Oh, it's a fascinating tidbit on cooperation behind battle lines. Or, again, it's the complete collusion between the phony left and the phony right. Jumping to gatewaypundit.blogspot.com, Obama tells disappointed supporters, "I'm the change." Oh, brother. Obama told his disappointed supporters who voted for him on the promise of change, only to find him to appoint old Clintonites and Bush cabinet members, not to be upset. "I'm the change," McClatchy reported. President-elect Barack Obama essentially said Wednesday that he is the change, striving to assure Americans that he'll shake up Washington despite filling his administration with old hands from the Clinton administration and the Capitol's corridors of power. Understanding where the vision for change comes from, first and foremost, it comes from me. That's my job, is to provide a vision in terms of where we're going and to make sure then that my team is implementing. Hallelujah. So, Obama weakly addressing, of course, the very real fear that, of course, he is just appointing all the same neocon Clintonite hawks that all still seem to come from the Council on Foreign Relations or the Brookings Institute or other secretive societies of think tanks and roundtable groups. There's a video and article about Obama scaling back his big inaugural balls. That's from Raw Story and Raw Replay. A few more headlines, though, and getting back to the question of natural-born requirement. There's a link to rattube.com, and it's a flashback to an Obama operative on the natural-born requirement. So this Obama operative, speaking back in 2006, called the natural-born requirement... What's the quote? I believe he called it, quote, stupid. So very early on, you got an Obama operative saying, oh, the talk about being a natural born, that's just stupid. That shouldn't be a requirement. Suit contesting Obama's citizenship heads to the Supreme Court. That's from the Chicago Tribune. Obama's familiar orbit of advisors from consortiumnews.com will... The Supreme Court take on Obama's citizenship case. That's from the Houston Chronicle. Questions over Obama's birthplace going viral. That's from, of course, WorldNet Daily. Obama's New World Order is the actual title of an article from Time Magazine. Obama's New World Order. Again, the revelation of the method. It's in your face now. It's not conspiracy talk. Obama's New World Order. It was hard to miss the message that Barack Obama was sending with the powerful tableau lined up behind him on stage in Chicago. I assembled this team because I'm a strong believer in strong personalities and strong opinions. That's just the first touch of an article from Time Magazine written by Karen Tumulty and Mark Thompson called Obama's New World Order. CFR and Brookings to dominate the Obama strategy. We've already mentioned that numerous times. That's another one from Kurt Nimmo. There's a video from Disclose.tv, Obama and the New World Order. Obama's Kettle of Hawks from Counterpunch. Obama vows U.S. military rule over the planet from Sharada.com. Keeping the military the, quote, strongest on the planet again from Raw Story. Military.com has an article, Obama's vow to change the DOD meets the facts. And finally, in this last list of headlines, on the Obamasiah, feeling that change, neocons and hawks in the coming criminal cabinet is another one from Kurt Nimmo, Obama's national security team, minions of the New World Order. His quote-unquote broad and diverse team... Clinton, Gates, Jones, Holder, Napolitano, Rice, all round out the change. So Kurt Nimmo's article, fortunately, runs down the shit list of Hillary Clinton and her connections to the Council on Foreign Relations and many other things. Robert Gates, and of course his expertise, is keeping insurgencies going in Afghanistan. Operation Cyclone. Ivo Dalder. General Jim Jones. It goes on and on and on, and it makes me ill. And I hope that you'll have your oh shit moment really fucking soon. We're going to shift gears back into the police state and back to Homeland Stupidity and the TSA. This is an excellent one. This brought more traffic to a video I posted up to YouTube back in March of this year. But we have an update, and we have people speaking out against this. guns likely to discharge in airplane cockpits. A group of pilots and the Homeland Security Inspector General have warned that a gun holster required by the TSA makes it likely that firearms could discharge in airplane cockpits. CNN's Jean Meserve reported that some pilots have refused to participate in the program until the TSA changes the holster design.
Well, in our efforts to prevent terror in the sky, the government may be creating a potential disaster. Some experts say it's not only possible, but maybe even likely that a pilot's loaded gun could go off in the cockpit by mistake. Homeland Security correspondent Jean Meserve is taking a look at a dangerous design flaw. John, Kieran, a gun firing inside an airplane is a terrifying scenario. But one part of a program intended to keep aircraft safe may actually increase the risk that could happen, according to the Inspector General of the Department of Homeland Security. Thousands of pilots have been trained to carry guns in the cockpit to defend their aircraft against hijackers.
Get out! Go!
But many pilots say they're unhappy with the holster, which the Transportation Security Administration requires them to use. When pilots leave the cockpit, they have to insert a padlock. As this video produced by a pilots group shows, if the gun isn't placed correctly in the holster, the padlock can end up in front of the trigger rather than behind it.
You now have a padlock bolt, very much like a finger, on the trigger of a loaded and ready firearm. When the pilot goes to unlock the weapon, simply moving the padlock can cause it to depress the trigger.
Because a cockpit can be darkened and stressful, the Department of Homeland Security Inspector General now concludes the design of the holster renders the weapon vulnerable to accidental discharges and recommends that TSA discontinue the holster's use. But the TSA hasn't done so. The agency says when handled correctly, the locking holster system meets program safety, security, and tactical accessibility requirements. But TSA says it is working with outside experts to review holster designs. Last March, a U.S. Airway pilot accidentally fired his gun while stowing it. The bullet pierced the cockpit wall and the fuselage. The plane landed safely, but the pilot lost his job. Until the holster is redesigned, one group claims, some pilots are refusing to participate in the armed pilot program.
They are concerned about playing I bet my job and bet the safety of the airplane on a design that is simply not safe.
Fewer pilots with guns means less protection on airplanes, and that impacts aviation safety for everyone who flies. John, Kieran, back to you.
Gene Meserve reporting for us this morning. Gene, thanks so much.
You can, of course, hit the flashback link to March of this year. Pilot's gun discharges on flight from, of course, the New World Airport in Denver, Colorado. Denver International Airport, home of the bizarre Illuminati murals and perhaps deep underground military bases and God knows what else. But we're going to jump now and shift gears, and it's going to be that way all around the world, all over the place for the rest of this episode 102 of MediaMonarchy.com. Jumping again to Danger Room, KBR subcontractor holding 1,000 workers in Iraq warehouses. KBR, the defense services giant, and its subcontractors have been repeatedly accused of using slave labor in Iraq. But despite the lawsuits and despite the congressional hearings, KBR and its business partners keep getting busted for treating its workers like little more than chattel. The latest. About 1,000 Asian men who were hired by a Kuwaiti subcontractor to the U.S. military have been confined for as long as 3 months in windowless warehouses near the Baghdad airport without money or a place to work, McClatchy reports. Najla International Catering Services, a subcontractor to former Halliburton subsidiary KBR, hired the men, who are from India, Nepal, Sri Lanka, and Bangladesh.
This is Adam Ashton from McClatchy Newspapers in Baghdad, here to report on a scene unfolding at the Baghdad airport, where Asian men who were lured to Iraq with contracts for steady work found those promises broken. About 1,000 of them had contracts to work for Najla International Catering Services. That Kuwaiti company recruited them to increase its staff in anticipation of new contracts to serve military forces stationed here. Those contracts didn't work as planned, leaving these workers without the jobs they counted on. They've been living in a sort of no-man's land here at the Baghdad airport for the past 2 to 3 months, staying in warehouses overseen by Najla. Today, they protested their living conditions and demanded back pay for their time in country. Najlin now intends to return them home and to give them their salaries. The men were skeptical that those assurances would be met. Another camp of men from the same countries sits in a dirt parking lot about a mile from the Najla warehouses. They didn't come to Iraq with ironclad contracts. They said middlemen they paid to get them here assured them they'd find work. Those pledges also fell through. Now about 50 of them live in this squatters' camp, still awaiting work. They don't want to go home. They want to find jobs to pay off the loans they took to get here. They want to be among the thousands of so-called third country nationals earning wages of $600 to $800 a month, working on coalition military bases with service contractors. The men could be deported at any time, and they'd return to family members who believe they're safe, earning money, and living on American bases that surround the airport.
Dovetailing nicely with that, a story that broke the day after that story about, you know, KBR subsidiaries holding thousands of people hostage for slave labor. The next day, from the Air Force Times, suit claims Halliburton and KBR sickened base. A Georgia man has filed a lawsuit against contractor KBR and its former parent company Halliburton, saying the companies exposed everyone at Joint Base Balad, B-A-L-A-D, in Iraq, to unsafe water, food, and hazardous fumes from the burn pit there. Joshua Eller, E-L-L-E-R, who worked as a civilian computer-aided drafting technician with the 332nd Air Expeditionary Wing, said military personnel, contractors, and third country nationals may have been sickened by contamination at the largest U.S. installation in Iraq, home to more than 30,000 service members. More terrific work from Halliburton and KBR. We need, again, someone like former Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney to question these bastards about whether it's common governmental practice to continue to do business with companies that are repeatedly busted for white slavery, slave rings, sex slaves, or in this case, slave labor. But we have a triptych of stories now about the attack on the children. Won't someone please think of the children? Three stories. The first one from the AFP, as well as copious other links to the think tank that did the report, as well as other news stories, themedguru.com and others. American teens lie, steal, and cheat at alarming rates. This was a study of nearly 30,000 high school students that concluded last Monday. The attitudes and conduct of some 29,000-plus high school students across the United States, quote, doesn't bode well for the future when these youngsters become the next generation's politicians, parents, cops, corporate executives, journalists, and generals. You can download the entire report. It's a meg and a half PDF from the nonprofit Josephson Institute. josephsoninstitute.org, as well as some of the other stuff, comes from charactercounts.org. The press releases, the questionnaires, the analysis is all available for you on the dishonest habits of American teens. In its 2008 report card on the ethics of the American youth, the LA-based organization said the teenagers' responses to questions about lying, stealing, and cheating, quote, reveals entrenched habits of dishonesty for the workforce of the future. Boys were found to lie and steal more than girls. As bad as the numbers are, it appears they understate the level of dishonesty exhibited by America's youth, the study warned, noting that more than a fourth of the students, 26%, admitted they had lied on at least one or two of the survey questions they were answering. Despite these high levels of dishonesty, these same kids have a high self-image when it comes to ethics. Some 93% of the students indicated satisfaction with their own character and ethics, with 77% saying that, quote, when it comes to doing what is right, I am better than most people I know. Deluded.
You'd be surprised to learn just how many teenagers cheat, lie, and steal, and that's what they admit to.
22 News reporter Veronica Cintron details the findings of a new study on high school students and ethics.
Almost 30,000 teens participated in that survey, and experts say the number of students admitting to being dishonest is alarming. For more young people, always doing their own work in school and always telling the truth might be a thing of the past.
I think it's a reality of what the mindset of teenagers do every day, but really just not my mindset.
The Josephson Institute released its annual report card on the ethics of American youth. In a survey of nearly 30,000 teens, over 30% admitted to stealing from a store within the past year. 42% said they lied to save money, and 64% admitted to cheating on a test. Some Chicopee High School students told 22 News it happens more than you think.
There's definitely kids that are like slacking and they don't do their work, and then they're like, oh, can I copy? And then other kids feel bad and like, yeah, sure, go ahead.
People can afford things or they want what other people have and don't want to spend their money on it.
As for the reasons behind the dishonest behavior in some of their peers, these teens point to added pressures, laziness, and the need for some to show off. And despite the high levels of dishonesty, respondents in this survey felt they often do what's right. A whopping 93% said they were satisfied with their personal ethics and character. Live in the studio, Veronica Cintron, 22 News.
That's another video that I grabbed and posted up to youtube.com/mediamonarchy. The views are mounting and the comments generally say, oh, duh, teens are dishonest. However, I totally have to admit that I've had moments now, and only being 31, where I look at kids half my age and think, we are fucked. You kids today. This one from Eco Child's Play. Childhood obesity, smoking, and sexual activity linked to media exposure. Again, these are all things that I heard growing up in the church. But here are, again, medical and journalistic reports pointing it out. It's up for debate. We should debate about it. Common Sense Media published the report, Media and Child and Adolescent Health, a Systematic Review, which reviewed 173 of the best studies from the last 30 years, which examined the connection between media exposure and negative health effects on children. The average modern child spends nearly 45 hours a week with TV, movies, magazines, music, the internet, cell phones, and video games. By comparison, children spend 17 hours a week with their parents and 30 hours a week in school. You can download the full 2.2 meg PDF, the executive summary of the report, Media and Child and Adolescent Health, a Systematic Review. Childhood obesity, smoking, and sex linked to media. As my man Jello says, as we hear at the top of every episode, don't hate the media, become the media. I've been thinking about, as the smoking ban is going to kick in here in Oregon on January 1st, the idea that now, you know, restaurants and bars are going to be forced to ban smoking, even though it's probably going to cause a huge hit to their business. If you own a business, if I have a bar and I want people to smoke in it, that's my fucking business. And guess what? You don't have to go there. We have this bizarre idea that we're entitled to things that we are not entitled to. If a business decides to keep having smoking and they see their business go down while the place that's smoke-free across the street does well, well, there, we voted with our dollars. And the idea that obscenity on the television or on the airwaves or on the internet, we have a right to not have those things forced upon us. You can turn the channel. The last story on the hat trick of the attack on the children. Soldiers of misfortune, recruiting kids to serve in the military. This is another original exclusive article on blacklistednews.com, this time by Sherwood Ross. In violation of its pledge to the UN not to recruit children into the military, the Pentagon, quote, regularly targets children under 17, end quote, the ACLU says. The Pentagon heavily recruits on high school campuses, targeting students for recruitment as early as possible and generally without limits on the age of students they contact. There is a 46-page report called Soldiers of Misfortune with the PDF link for you. It all details the violations of the U.S. Senate's 2002 ratification of the optional protocol to the U.N. Convention on the Rights of the Child. Pentagon recruiters are enrolling children as young as 14 in the Junior Reserve Officer Training Corps, JROTC, in 3,000 middle, junior, and high schools nationwide, causing about 45% of the 250,000 students so enrolled to enlist, a rate much higher than in the general student population. Clearly, this is the outcome of underage exposure. There have been a lot of bizarre... You know, you very probably well know that I'm a Simpsons obsessive. In the last several years, there have been a lot of amazing episodes, and the movie itself is a great example of this, of the bizarre sort of police state propaganda that has been filtering its way into Simpsons episodes. If you saw the movie, which again we went over here on MediaMonarchy.com, the movie was all about an human-caused environmental disaster, and so the federal government quarantines the town, and when they don't know what to do with it, they decide they're just going to blow it up, and they bring in Tom Hanks to sell the idea. There was also episodes about Bart being signed up for the military when he was far too young. And of course, to get out of it, Homer takes his place, and the episode ends up having urban warfare drills within Springfield. But the funny part that I remember, and that's what this is making me think of, is we read about soldiers of misfortune recruiting kids to serve in the military. Is that when one of the kids say, "But aren't we too young to join the military?" They say, "Don't worry, we'll reserve you a spot in the fight in America's next unresolvable conflict." So that's the three stories about the children. Now I have three more stories about the shadow government, the continuity of government, and domestic security. So the first one, the funny one, from Raw Story and Raw Replay, as well as Newsmax and HistoryCommons.org, always a good thanks to them, as well as ThinkProgress.org. Jeb Bush says the GOP should create a shadow government. As if there isn't one already.
I think that there are three things the Republican Party needs to do. In Washington, we need to show humility and be the loyal opposition. I actually think we need to organize ourselves in the form of a shadow government and make it based on policy, not on partisanship. People are sick and tired of the partisanship just for partisan's sake, but they aren't sick and tired of a loftier debate about policy. And the Republican ideas, once expressed, are the right ideas. So I would suggest that the Republican D.C. section would be playing defense, if you will, and reminding people that there is a difference, and do so in a way that's focused on policy. At the state level and local level, there's much that we can do to advance our cause, and I think there it is correct that we should be playing offense, and we should have a passion for reform. We can't be Democrat light. We can't just get along. We have to actually be proposing solutions to what appear to be intractable problems as it relates to education, healthcare, infrastructure. Across the board, there are ways that we can show that we are truly on the side of the people that are concerned about the future of the country without abandoning our principles. And there, you know, Governor Jindal is a great example of a governor who is leading by example and has a passion for reform. That should be the model across the country.
Jeb Bush saying, of course, we need to create a shadow government as if there isn't one already. That's another clip added to the list of all the recent mentions out in the open again of shadow government. But they're using it in a funny way. They're not using it in the continuity of government, true globalist banksters behind the scenes shadow government. They mean it as a we'll be quiet and kind of in the shadows and not out doing press conferences. They just mean kind of secretively. So we also heard Tom Brokaw say, are you going to be some kind of shadow government, when he was talking to new Obama criminal cabinet appointee Valerie Jarrett, when she was saying that Obama's going to come in ready to, quote, rule. So we hear shadow government thrown around a lot lately, and it's interesting. However, the second story from Consortium News, this also has a video clip with it. We're not going to play it this time. It's an excellent one from The Real News, one of my subscriptions on my YouTube.com/Media Monarchy channel. The dangers of continuity of government. The U.S. government has committed a full army brigade to deal with national catastrophe or to quell internal unrest. This extraordinary commitment of troops for domestic operations is a result of President George W. Bush's continuity of government directive, which also allows the president to coordinate all three branches of government in the event of a declared crisis. According to former Reagan administration legal official Bruce Fein, F-E-I-N, I believe he's now a big lawyer and civil rights advocate, perhaps with the ACLU, I don't have a link there for you. Bruce Fein says these powers represent a threat to America's constitutional system and traditional liberties. The third story, what wraps this all up and what we just referenced, as the Pentagon now increases the amount. So, a couple months ago, we of course reported about the Homeland Brigades, the combat brigades being assigned to NORTHCOM for domestic security. Now, it doesn't get as much attention as they double and triple and quadruple the number. Now, the latest from the Washington Post, and again, more excellent coverage from RussiaToday.com, Pentagon plans to station 20,000 troops in the U.S. for, quote, domestic security. So I think this is another case of the military-industrial complex prepping us for a shattered union, with a link for you to that amazing trailer for a video game called Shattered Union that lays out a frightening future scenario. However, let's return to Russia Today. Fears over Pentagon's new 20,000-strong internal force of domestic security.
3 years, 20,000 more U.S. troops, but not to Iraq or Afghanistan. According to Pentagon officials, these men and women will be stationed inside of the U.S. Thousands of additional uniformed men and women set to be trained by 2011. They'll serve as a response to a possible mass terror attack or civil unrest following an economic collapse. So how concerned are Americans about this?
20,000 more troops here in the U.S.?
I have not heard any of that, actually. No, I have not.
Ben Friedman of the Cato Institute, a libertarian think tank, explained what this bombshell will mean for the U.S.
Is this just the beginning of this expansion of presidential authority, of military authority here in the U.S.?
I hope not. We've seen the expansion of the use of the military within the United States for some time. A lot of the concern with the story about these troops being used for domestic purposes was that they would engage in law enforcement, arresting people, detaining them. They can't do that.
But that hasn't stopped people from speculating.
It doesn't seem right to have the military guarding the interior of the country. It seems like a dangerous power grab.
I think that would be extremely unreasonable.
Policing your own people sounds like we're in Afghanistan or something.
Even some foreigners, such as this South African political scientist, don't think it's such a good idea.
These are your citizens. They deserve your protection, but not to the extent that it becomes a militarized police state. And I think we've had years of that, and I think that's more than enough.
But the real concern might be that Americans are depending too much on U.S. troops.
What we should worry about is that the United States citizenry will become overly dependent on the military to deal with what are essentially government tasks.
You know, what scares me is what happens 25, 30 years, 40, 50 years from now. You know, after the population's gotten used to seeing the military guard in the streets.
Pentagon officials agree that the U.S. has undergone a dramatic change in its military culture. However, most Americans are hoping that the men and women in uniform will not confuse their responsibilities with that of law enforcement here in the U.S. Dina Gosofsky, RT, Washington, D.C.
More excellent work from RussiaToday.com, but let's jump to the main report from the Washington Post. Pentagon plans to station 20,000 troops in U.S. for domestic security. The U.S. military expects to have 20,000 uniformed troops inside the United States by 2011, trained to help state and local officials respond to a nuclear terrorist attack or other domestic catastrophe, which is, of course, appropriately vague. The long-planned shift in the Defense Department's role in homeland security was recently backed with funding and troop commitments after years of prodding by Congress and outside experts. There are critics of the change in the military and among civil liberties groups and libertarians who express concern that the new homeland emphasis threatens to strain the military and possibly undermine the Posse Comitatus Act, as if it hasn't been completely undermined and obliterated already. the, of course, 130-year-old federal law restricting the military's role in domestic law enforcement. But the Bush administration and some in Congress have pushed for a heightened homeland military role since the middle of this decade, saying the greatest domestic threat is terrorists exploiting the proliferation of WMD. Before 9/11, dedicating 20,000 troops to domestic response, a nearly sevenfold increase in 5 years, would have been extraordinary to the point of unbelievable, said Paul McHale, Assistant Defense Secretary for Homeland Defense, saying in remarks last month at a Center for Strategic and International Studies meeting, with a link for you to CSIS.org. He went on to say that this is, of course, a fundamental change in military culture. So, again, sidebar, as we've said before, there are these things that they want to do, but somehow they just don't have the political capital to do it. But then, as we saw many years ago, this coming December 7th, back in 1941, an attack happens to change everybody's mind. So before 9/11, this would have been unbelievable. But of course, you have a catalyzing event as called for in the Project for a New American Century's Rebuilding America's Defenses, or as, of course, Brzezinski talks about in the Grand Chessboard. It's going to be hard to fashion a consensus in the future, unless, of course, there's a widely perceived external threat. Last paragraph of the article from the Washington Post. The Pentagon's plan calls for 3 rapid reaction forces to be ready for emergency responses by September 2011. The first 4,700-person unit, built around an active-duty combat brigade based at Fort Stewart in Georgia, was available as of October 1st, said General Victor E. Renart, Jr., commander of the U.S. Northern Command. And, of course, we can hit that flashback link to MediaMonarchy.com from the Army Times going back to September 18th. The original article, you may recall, was titled Helping People at Home May Become Permanent Part of the Army. And that's what broke the dam on the story about the Homeland Brigades and domestic security. 2 interesting updates and dovetails to this story added this morning. First, from the Phoenix Business Journal, U.S. troops may be deployed in Arizona and Southwest U.S., which again I'll mention. Arizona is now currently where Operation Angel Thunder is taking place from December 1st to the 12th. International war games and terror drills on U.S. soil with troops from Germany and Chile and Colombia and observers from Pakistan and Canada. U.S. troops may be deployed in Arizona and Southwest U.S. U.S. Defense Department plans to deploy as many 20,000 as 20,000 troops within the U.S. for homeland security and anti-terrorism efforts could result in a significant number being placed or having some kind of presence in Arizona and the Southwest, according to security experts. There have been threats against the Palo Verde nuclear generating station west of Phoenix, the Hoover Dam on the Arizona-Nevada border, as well as the Las Vegas Strip and LAX. Arizona is also home to U.S. military intel operations at Fort Huachuca. I may be mispronouncing that. They visit the website a lot, and we'll probably hit them here in just a few minutes. It's Huachuca, Fort Huachuca, or Oaxaca, not Oaxaca. That's Mexican. Anyway, Arizona is also home to U.S. military intelligence operations at Fort Huachuca and has become a focal point with border security efforts along the Mexican border. The Washington Post recently reported the Pentagon plans to have up to 20,000 troops. The second update, the third story, goes wide angle, or rather maybe micro. We'll focus in on St. Louis now, not in Arizona. This from the Associated Press, as well as links to Salt Lake Today, STLtoday.com. St. Louis City leader, St. Louis, messing up my abbreviation. St. Louis city leader says police are ineffective and tells residents to get armed. A St. Louis city leader frustrated with the police response to rising crime called on Tuesday for residents to arm themselves to protect their lives and property. Alderman Charles Quincy Thorpe said police are ineffective, outnumbered, or don't care about the increase of crime in his North St. Louis ward. St. Louis has had 150 homicides in 2008, 33 more than last year at this time. The community has to be ready to defend itself because it's clear the economy is going to get worse and criminals are getting more bold, Troop 72 said Tuesday. Troop said that when he and residents approached a district police commander last year, they were told, quote, there was nothing he could do to protect us and the community, that he didn't have the manpower. Police did not immediately return requests for comment. Chief Dan Isom, ISOM, told the St. Louis Post-Dispatch he understands troops' frustration but doesn't support citizens arming themselves. Carrying guns, he said, is not a recipe for a less violent community. However, there are many that would disagree with that statement. Again, reminding me of a Simpsons reference, of course, when Wiggum, police chief, tells the truth that the law is powerless to protect you, but later on admits, well, the law is powerless to protect you, but not to punish you. I believe the last story we're going to have time for on this episode 102 of MediaMonarchy.com is a bizarre one. A little bit of sci-fi for you. And you have to go look and see the video for yourself so you can see just how creepy and lifelike this robot twin is. This from CNN and Raw Story. Doctor builds robot twin to study his soul. CNN's report about a Kyoto doctor that's created an uncanny robot twin. Hiroshi Ishiguro, it's I-S-H-I-G-U-R-O, Hiroshi Ishiguro believes that his robot double can help in the understanding of human presence. Ishiguro is well known for creating lifelike androids, and there's a link to a story from a few years ago from the BBC, but let's listen to the quick 2 minutes from CNN about the Kyoto doctor building a robot twin to study his soul.
Much as we'd like to sometimes, it's impossible to be in two places at one time. Or is it? CNN's Kyung Law is doing a double take and a report on the edge of discovery.
You are not seeing double. Well, sort of. This is the Geminoid, an android version of its inventor, Hiroshi Ishiguro, a professor of robotics at Osaka University.
Blinks like you.
And the hair is also mine. This is same as the twins.
But not quite. An operator using multiple cameras and infrared detectors for lip movement runs a Geminoid from another room. Dr. Ishiguro steps behind the curtain and we continue our talk from here.
I can have another personality or another presence. I can control this robot from anywhere.
The ability to be in two places at once. Say, roboting into the office while you work from home. After a few minutes, I even forget that the Geminoid is separate from Dr. Ishiguro.
Does it feel like I was touching you?
You know, I can feel something.
Professor, are you studying humans or androids?
Both. By developing an android, I'm studying a human. This is a robot.
Dr. Ishiguro has been developing robots like this for years, but they didn't look human. Yeah. He believes this machine, that looks so much like a man, can be used to study human behavior.
If we replace the all human functions with the technology, okay, then we can understand what is a human.
Trying to understand the human soul by building from the outside in. Kyung Law, CNN, Kyoto, Japan.
I'm creeped out.
I know, I'm saying. It looks like Chucky. You know, the old movie is horrible.
Plus, if you were, like, studying robots or androids, would you create one that looks exactly like you?
No. Well, I don't know.
Creepy.
They could read the news.
Then we could be sleeping.
Right, yeah.
So there they say they wish they had clones that could read the news for you. Then they could be at home asleep. Let's cram in one more fun, interesting story from the Toronto Star. 2,700-year-old marijuana found in a Chinese tomb. And the stash seemed intended for the buried shaman to use in the afterlife. Researchers say they've located the world's oldest stash of marijuana in a tomb in a remote part of China. The cache of cannabis is about 2,700 years old and was clearly cultivated for psychoactive purposes rather than as fiber for clothing or food, says a research paper in the Journal of Experimental Botany, and I have the link for you there, oxfordjournals.org. You can read the whole thing. The 789 grams of dried cannabis was buried alongside a light-haired, blue-eyed Caucasian man, likely a shaman of the Guxi culture near Turpan in northwestern China. G-U-S-H-I, with a link for you to read more about that region and community. The extremely dry conditions and alkaline soil acted as preservatives, allowing a team of scientists to carefully analyze the stash, which still looked green, though it had lost its distinctive odor. To our knowledge, these investigations provide the oldest documentation of cannabis as a pharmacologically active agent, said the newly published paper, whose lead author was American neurologist Dr. Ethan B. Russo. Remnants of cannabis have been found in ancient Egypt and other sites, and the substance has been referred to by authors such as the Greek historian Herodotus. But this Chinese tomb stash is the oldest so far that could be thoroughly tested for its properties. So, there you go. What Bill Hicks always wanted, a positive drug story. There's another one for you. The sidebar update to that from the AFP, Swiss stub out cannabis decriminalization bid. Swiss voters on Sunday rejected a proposal to decriminalize cannabis by a clear majority in a nationwide referendum. Switzerland is the heaviest user of cannabis in Europe, according to a recent study, but the proposal to decriminalize the drug failed to win popular support in the majority of cantons. And there are links in there to Bloomberg and allheadlinenews.com and the AFP again. That's not so positive a drug story. Wrapping up this episode 102, looking real quick again at breaking news right now, Friday morning, December 5th, 2008. O.J. Simpson says he's sorry for the robbery, but that didn't stop him from being sentenced to 15 years in prison today, with the possibility of being released after 9 years on robbery and kidnapping charges for leading an armed robbery of two sports memorabilia dealers inside a Las Vegas hotel room. Again, we remind you that employers cut 533,000 jobs in November, the most in 33 years. Not going to have time to get into all the updates on the Mumbai attacks. There are many, and I have even more that I haven't posted up yet. We're going to have to get to that on the B-side of episode 102 of MediaMonarchy.com, because right now it's time to look at the long and creepy list of people visiting MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. Thanks in no small part, again, I said it at the beginning, I'll say it again, the link from BlacklistedNews.com to my posting about Project Bluebeam, TV fakery, holographic projections, and audio spotlights got mad traffic to MediaMonarchy.com in the past day. Hits were over 1,000 yesterday, and again, that was mostly all thanks to Doug and Mike at BlacklistedNews.com. So we'll get to some of the interesting people who reading about Project Bluebeam and were reading BlacklistedNews.com. But first, let's start at the USC Medical Center in Pico Rivera, California. They hit me up from my link on sourcewatch.org about Blackwater Worldwide. Higher School of Economics State University from the Russian Federation was visiting MediaMonarchy.com. Columbia Healthcare out of Nashville, Tennessee, Googled debunking JFK conspiracy theories. The Oregon State System of Higher Education out of Ashland, Oregon, Googled the Masons and the plot to kill JFK. Turner Broadcasting System out of Atlanta, Georgia, they were reading about Oswald's wallet, which, of course, you have to ask, which one? DOD Network Information Center out of Columbus, Ohio, they were reading about Northcom, 9/11, biometrics, and secession. That's an older post on MediaMonarchy.com. The Bureau of the Census, census.gov out of Upper Marlboro, Maryland, they Googled September clues. Of course, the film made about TV fakery and video manipulation of the events of 9/11. Not going to get into that right now. The United States Postal Service out of Raleigh, North Carolina, they're reading about E. Howard Hunt details JFK plot on never-before-seen video. That's the most recent video from just a couple months ago of all the revelations of now dead Black Ops spy E. Howard Hunt. University of North Carolina at Asheville Googled media and U.S. government 9/11, and of course they landed here. GE out of Fairfield, Connecticut, Googled National Geographic Channel, schedule, DARPA, secret weapon. That's interesting. The Department of Veteran Affairs out of South Holland, Illinois, Googled Arkansas Blackwater deaths. the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, soon to be headed by bankster friend and big pharma friend Tom Daschle, of course, the target of the mysterious anthrax attacks. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, again out of Upper Marlboro, Maryland, they Googled National Level Exercise 2009. That's, of course, the Northrop Grumman FEMA terror drill coming up early in 2009. The Drug Enforcement Administration, of course, out of Arlington, Virginia, a big fan of MediaMonarchy.com. Korean Education Network Googled false flag Mumbai video. Again, the Department of Veteran Affairs, this time out of Washington, D.C., Googled FEMA police force. The Department of Veteran Affairs, VA.gov, again, a slightly different IP address. They were reading about Project Bluebeam from my link on blacklistednews.com, as are the next dozen or so names that I'm going to read off to you. Pacific Gas and Electric Company, the George Washington University, Texas State Comptrollers of Public Accounts out of Austin, Texas, the Federal Aviation Administration out of Oklahoma City, the MCAAP.Army.mil Headquarters USAISC Fort Huachuca, Arizona, the Boeing Company out of Long Beach, California, the Kazee Law Office out of Prestonsburg, Kentucky, which instantly made me think of Matt Kazee. I know he's a Southern boy. I wonder if they're related. The Kazee Law Office out of Kentucky hit up MediaMonarchy.com from the link on Blacklisted News about Project Bluebeam, as well as the Amoco Corporation and the Lawrence Livermore Laboratory out of San Francisco. Again, check out this posting all about military technology and the ability to project the image of your favorite deity over your skies. And the idea that a sort of fake War of the Worlds alien invasion or some sort of fake Zionist rapture psyop event could happen. The technology is there. They can project images in the sky. They can beam sound into your head. But will they use it? So that's what I went over mostly on last night's B-side of 101, Project Bluebeam. The last couple visitors, though, was the University of Arkansas at Fayetteville, Arkansas. They added a link to my Bluebeam story. But finally, our own Oregon Health and Science University, OHSU, out of Portland, Oregon, they were reading about Codex Alimentarius, criminalizing natural healing. And that really is going to do it, my friends, for this episode 102 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster. Coming to you live, as always, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and Sunday nights at 7 on the Revere Radio Network, revereradio.net. Thanks for getting the show. Thanks for staying on board. Thanks for going through all of this with me. And again, get in touch with me, FaceSpace, Yahoo, IM, Skype, YouTube, you name it, MediaMonarchy.com. Like my man Webster Tarpley says, get active or get radioactive. Take care.
Police would get him just the same.